And welcome to another episode of the West Ham Way USA podcast. I'm your co-host, Tony. And on the other side, we actually have a different guest today. It is not Brawley from St. Louis. We have James from the American Toffee podcast located in Maine. What's up, James? Thank you for coming on.
What's up, Tony? How you doing, man? Thanks for having me. Excited to talk a little preview.
Absolutely. I appreciate this. So, folks, you'll be able to listen to this on both our platform and on the American Toffee podcast as their West Ham United preview for this weekend. So, we have James on because we play Everton this weekend at 7:30 Eastern. That is the 12:30 lunchtime kickoff in England, and it is live on NBCSN. So, James, since we have you, what is your normal game day routine? Are you a stay at home and watch in bed kind of guy? Go to the local pub? What's your plans?
Yeah, so for me, being an Everton fan, which is niche enough in itself, and then also being in Maine, I don't have any hard facts or stats to back this up, but I suspect I'm probably one of the only Everton fans in Maine. As a result of that, my general game day routine is to wake up about 90 minutes before kickoff, browse Twitter, wait for the lineups to drop, and then enjoy the game in solitude for the most part, which based on our results this season, I'm pretty glad that that's the way it usually plays out.
I know, looking a little rough. I forget where I had you guys in our table, but currently 18th with 7 points, 2 wins and 5 losses. What's going on down there, man?
It's been tough, Tony. I'm not going to lie to you. Everton fans, I think across the board, were hoping this would be the season. Based on our transfer market activity in the summer and the way that we finished last season with some big wins, thought that that would carry over into this season and that we could push for the top six. That obviously hasn't happened. We had a very, very favorable schedule to start the season. The only top six team we've played have been Manchester City. We played 2 of the 3 newly promoted sides and managed to lose to both of them. It's been tough, and I can go into the reasons for it, but largely just down to individual errors and general ineptitude going forward.
So let's see. Marco Silva is the manager. Am I right?
That's correct.
Yeah. So how are you feeling about him? Two questions, I guess I should say. How do you feel about him? And how does Everton fan base as a whole feel about Marco Silva right now?
Right now, based on the start to the season, the general consensus amongst the fan base is, I think, pretty much leaning towards Silva out. For me, I still think that, you know, because the errors that we've seen have been mostly individual, I think it's hard. You know, it's a game of such fine margins, right? Like a game or a goal can shift things dramatically. And it's still very early. Like, we are in 18th, but we're 6 points away from being right back in the mix for the top half.
Oh, absolutely.
So I think it's a little preemptive to try to talk about sacking him. But it's been bad, and it's been really stagnant, which I think is what's gotten most fans the most frustrated, where you just see the same things fail week in, week out, and there hasn't been much of a push to switch things up and maybe try something different.
I'm very, very nervous for this game to play you guys this weekend, because we were 3 points away. If we would have beat Palace at home, and I was at the game, by the way, last 2 weeks ago against Palace, if we would have beat Palace, we would have been on 15 points, sitting tied with Arsenal for third. Instead, we took a loss to Crystal Palace. They jump us, and now we're in eighth. And to be fair, if you guys beat us this weekend, you're only 2 points off of us. So everybody's still right in the mix, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's way too early. We're 7 games in. Like, 3 to 6 points right now is absolutely massive, can jump you 10 spots in the table.
Right.
So I agree, this game, it's always West Ham Everton tends to be a bit of a trap game for both teams. I think we both probably go in expecting to beat the other one, but it's been relatively even for most of the time that I've supported Everton.
Absolutely. So just for all of our listeners on both sides here, Everton won the last one on March 30th this previous year, and then West Ham won 3-1, West Ham won 3-1, and then Everton won 4-0, and then a draw. So it's been fairly even the last 5 matches.
Yeah, it has. And I think you see that based on where both teams end up finishing. And I think we're competing for the same spots in the table, though the table may not reflect that right now. So these fixtures are huge when you're beating the teams that are right around you in the table. Those are valuable points for sure.
Absolutely. And I do have to bring up here, because I did on the last time I was on your podcast, and all of our listeners, I feel like I bring up every podcast, even if it's not Everton. Everton away was the best day of my life. That's all. I just had to get it out of the way now. Have you gotten a chance to get to Goodison before?
I haven't yet, unfortunately. And with the talks of the new stadium being built within the next probably 4 or 5 years, it's becoming a really pressing matter to get over there. I think Alex, my co-host, and I are trying to plan a trip. Ooh. If not next spring, then probably the following fall, because we're desperate to get over there. You hear so many good things about Goodison Park and what the atmosphere is like. So it's one thing to watch it on TV, and even from there you get a sense of, the magnitude and the atmosphere, but there's nothing quite like when you're just sitting in the stadium. So I am patiently awaiting the day that I can finally make my pilgrimage.
I will say it was a really, really cool ground, and not even because you're on the podcast, but that was one of my favorite grounds, obviously because of the game. But also, it was really interesting to see the old style stadium. But I will tell you what, because that's what really cemented for me getting into West Ham, is I had to really go to see the Bowling Ground before they knocked that down and we moved to the London Stadium. And I had 3 years to start planning a trip. So I think you got, 3 or 4 years to start planning a trip for yourself as well.
Yeah, and we're kind of in the works right now. There's the Everton USA fan group does a spring break trip. Ooh. Every March. And so we're debating on whether or not we want to go with that group or if we want to kind of do our own thing. But regardless, I really, it's like my number one vacation destination. And people ask me, like, oh, if you could go anywhere in the world, where'd you go? And I'm like, Liverpool, England. And they're like, what? of anywhere. But they just don't really understand.
I completely understand. I've been asked multiple times of where do you want to go? And my next trip, I want to go to France. I want to go to Spain. But I'll tell you what, it's always when I go to book a flight, somehow, some way, I don't go to any other country other than England. So. So let's keep it moving. So anyway, who should West Ham, because we're going to record for both here, who should we look out for in the Everton side? Because you guys have been struggling, and I'm sure you're probably rotating some of the side. Who should West Ham fans look out for this weekend?
So I think the first name that jumps out is Richarlison, a really young and promising Brazilian who has cemented his place in the Brazil national team. He's had a bit of a slow start to the season, but he's probably our most dynamic and technically, maybe not technically gifted, but his physical attributes and his pace are enough to, and he's just kind of has a knack for popping in at the exact right place at the right time and scoring goals. A player that can play across the front three, he functions best on the left, but based on the personnel we have at our disposal, he's operated mostly on the right-hand side for the last, since probably about last spring until now, he's kind of been shoehorned into that right-wing role. And then in addition to that, I think you have to look out for Luka Dean at left back. He's a player that gets forward really well and knows how to put in a cross and is also excellent at free kicks. So he's a player that, even though he's on defense, can really change the game on the offensive end as well.
Absolutely. So I got to pose the question to you then, because I feel like when I was on your podcast last year, we had this discussion between Felipe Anderson and Richarlison. Would you still stick with Richarlison, or would you switch it up for Felipe Anderson?
I can't go against my boy Richie. You know that. But I really do admire Felipe Anderson. I think, based on age, Richarlison's still only 21. Mm-hmm. So he's, younger. But, I mean, Anderson is an excellent player, and you guys have assembled quite a squad. I'm really happy to see Yarmolenko return from that really brutal injury that he had last season, because I don't know if you know this, but there were probably two or three seasons in a row before he moved to you guys that he was linked with us. And I was, you watch the highlight videos and he has that flair about him. And I was always hoping we could get the deal across the line and see him in a blue shirt. But it's nice to see that he actually looks like he's got 3 goals for you guys already this year.
Yeah, he's doing extremely well. He's one of those players, or at least in my opinion so far this season, that he hasn't really looked too good And then all of a sudden, like, he's played solid. He wasn't the best or the worst. He's played solid. But then, bam, comes out of nowhere and smashes in a goal just as someone's about to say, man, he should be the first one to go off. So it's been really nice to see him play very well and score some goals. My next question for you about Everton would be Dominic Calvert-Lewin.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on him? Because he's super young as well, right?
Yeah, he's only 22 years old. It may not seem that way. He's been in and around our first team for the last three seasons. He's a bit of a tough one because we actually, I don't know if you know this, but we signed Moise Keane from Juventus in the summer. And people were kind of assuming that when we paid, what, $27 million for him, that he would be the go-to guy. But Calvert-Lewin has made things difficult for Silva because he's scored three goals in his last five matches or something like that. And so that was kind of always the biggest criticism of Calvert-Lewin because he's a big body. He's got great pace. He holds the ball up really well, is great in the air, but the goal scoring consistency just hasn't been there for him. And so now that that's starting to come around, I think fans are willing to give him a bit of a longer leash as far as his tenure up top. But if not Calvert-Lewin, then Moise Keane is a player that, if he starts, we haven't seen it quite yet because he's 19 and still adapting to the league, but just based on the promise and potentially showed at Juve, is the player I think most Evertonians are really excited about because we've struggled for so long to score goals after losing Romelu Lukaku to United.
I mean, I just think it's crazy how young your attacking force is, and I think that's kind of the opposite of what we have going on, because Richarlison says here's 22, DCL is 22, Alex Iwobi is 22, and Keane is what, 19. So, yeah. I mean, I thought a lot for Alex Iwobi, but here he is scoring two goals for you so far. So, you guys have a really young team. I mean, if you look at our side, you have Sebastian Haller, who's I believe 27. You have Antonio, who's injured, going up in age. Yarmolenko's up in age. Anderson is about in his prime, doing well. Lanzini, I believe, is 28 or 29 as well. So our team is up in that prime area, and it is time for us to really start getting some results as well.
Yeah, it's an interesting one because I think, you know, teams that are older tend to be, I think, more consistent, more established. And actually, that's a really good point because I think that's something that Evertonians tend to overlook is the overall youth in our squad. We've dropped a lot of years off the average age since the arrival of Marcel Brands last summer, our new director of football, who arrived from PSV. And it takes time for young players to A, adapt to the league, and B, adapt to each other and just mature as players. So when you look at a squad that has more established, I mean, Aller has been, it was a huge signing for you guys, right? Like that's a game changer.
Absolutely. He was the replacement for Marko Arnautović.
Yeah. And so, I mean, just the fact that you guys have those established pros, I think makes it a bit easier to get through those tough times. I think they may be a bit more mentally resilient. And this squad has a lot of growing room, which I think, you know, bodes well for the future. But in the now, you know, fans can be so reactionary, and it's hard not to be when you're watching your team just struggle and slog through games week in, week out. But I think that age difference actually may play a bigger role than people think.
Yeah. And I'm looking at your fixtures coming up, and I think you at least have a fairly decent run. You play against us, then you have Brighton. But one of the big things is to, I don't want to say dismiss, but you're in the round of 16 of the Football League Cup.
Yeah, and the Cup is huge, huge, huge for Everton because it's been so long since fans have had silverware. I mean, the fans who are obviously lifelong grew up in Liverpool, they're fans that are my age that have barely remember us reaching cup finals, and we haven't won anything since 1995. So the cup runs are huge. Like, I think a lot of fans at this point would sacrifice an 11th place finish if it meant reaching a cup final or winning some silverware, even if it's the League Cup. And we've struggled. We've been really bad. We went out to Millwall last season. I mean, we tend to play down to our opposition in cup competitions, which makes things difficult for us. And I know that you guys had a bit of a trip up, so to speak, in the cup the other week.
Yeah, I mean, we got, I wouldn't say trip, I would say an absolute mauling by Oxford United 4-0. Wasn't too good for us. And that's what happened last season. We actually went out to Wimbledon as well. So for us lately, we've been on these up and down runs where we went unbeaten, let's see, in the league. A draw against Bournemouth, beat Man United, draw against Villa, beat Norwich, beat Watford and drew Brighton. I mean, we were almost like five or six unbeaten there, and then dropped the ball at home to Palace up 1-0, which was absolutely gutting. So who knows what West Ham side is going to show up this weekend?
Yeah, the Palace ones. Palace are having a really, really good season, and people were really quick to write them off. We had, of course, I don't know if you followed the Wilfred Zaha transfer, quote unquote, saga towards the end of the window, but
definitely
he was linked.
Saga. Yeah, I saw that.
Linked with us. We were really excited to have him, and people were saying, you know, Palace will go down without him. And they kept him, and they're performing really well. And I think, you know, Roy Hodgson doesn't really get the credit he deserves for what he's been able to do with that side.
I had them going down in our preseason preview. One, because I just can't stand Palace. I just really can't. I don't like their fans. I think their Palace Ultra is a bunch of dickheads that are like 15-year-old kids. But beyond that point, I don't really think they're that good of a side. And then all of a sudden, here they are, beat us and just jump us in the table. But like you said, at the same time, trying to be positive about it, one win can take you up into the top four, and one loss can put you down to number 14.
Right. It's just such fine margins. And that's the thing, like people calling to sack the manager for Everton. It's just like, give it 10, 12 games and see how the table really starts to take shape, because who knows, like form is so temporary unless you're a team that's like Liverpool or City, and even City have had their struggles. Everyone's struggling this season. Like Arsenal have struggled, Chelsea have struggled, Man United struggling a lot. So even the teams that are up top are struggling. And then you have everyone below them who, I mean, it's typical to have – that's the weird thing about the Premier League is you have these preconceived notions of teams that you quote-unquote should beat or shouldn't beat. Yep. But every week is just so tough, and you never know what side's going to show up for either team.
Absolutely, and I think that's what I like about the Premier League the most, and that's why whenever someone asks me which is the best league in the world, the top of the top may not be the best compared to everybody else. So like City or Liverpool, I would argue that, well, not this season, but typically Real Madrid or Barcelona, I'd argue that those teams, Juventus, all those teams might be better at the top, PSG. But when it comes to the bottom, I mean, any given day, Norwich will beat Man City.
Right. Like you just can't, you don't see that happen in other leagues at all. And the parity is what makes it so compelling.
Oh, absolutely.
And at the same time, as frustrating when you're dropping, I mean, like I said, we've already lost to Sheffield United. We lost to Burnley. And so it's been an up and down season, mostly down so far, to say the least.
Well, that's exactly right. You know, we just beat Manchester United and lost to Palace. So one of the other things to note is for you guys, for your fans on your side, you know, we lost our first four games last season. And everybody, and a few people, not too many because it was a starting project, where we're like, sack Pellegrini. And then we ended up finishing top half at 10. So, and 2 points off you guys. So, and fighting for top seven all season, we dropped the ball a few times. We had like five or six chances to go seventh. But either way, you know, we still finished top half and a solid end to the season. So, I'm pretty proud of what happened. And, you know, I wouldn't write off after eight games so far this season.
No, definitely not. And I did want to ask you how I'm going to have to pause. Declan Rice has been performing for you guys this season, because he's one that I know has been really highly touted and has made his way into the England squad here and there, and really a really strong defensive midfield player.
Yeah, so Declan Rice for me has been one of our key players. He has been absolutely astounding chasing balls down in the midfield, and I don't think he gets enough credit. One thing to note, though, is there's a lot of people talking about his performance in England this week, and I don't think he really had the best game, but at the same time, not really many of them did. So there's a lot of people who don't rate Declan Rice, but he's 20 years old, and he's leading majority of the categories in the Premier League at 19, 20 years old as a DM. Yeah. So I highly rate him. I think he's one of our best players, and I hope that he does not leave in January of the summer. I saw there's a few reports that Manchester United might be coming in for him. But I've said on our other podcast, if someone gives us big money for Declan Rice, I think we do sell. And as long as we reinvest the money, I would be happy to sell. It would break my heart, but I think the money will go for better longevity.
Yeah, I think that's the mentality you have to have. And just in regard to that defensive midfield position, which is so key, I think you can chalk a lot of Everton's struggles this season up to having lost Idrissa Gana Gueye to PSG. If you look at what he's done since he's moved there, he's been incredible for them. Mm-hmm. And any Everton fan would tell you that he, based on his performances for us over the last few seasons, we got him from Aston Villa when they last time they were relegated for $7.5 million. And sold him at 30 years old for whatever it was, $30 million. Absolutely incredible at winning the ball back, at pressuring the opposition. And then the player that we brought in to replace him, Jean-Philippe Gabamann from Mainz in Germany, he's been injured. He picked up a serious quad injury, and he's been out for the past 6 or 7 weeks. So you take away that from our midfield, a player like Ghana, arguably top 3 or 4 defensive midfield players in the world, and then you also lose his replacement, it creates this imbalance in midfield, which I think has caused us a lot of problems because we've had to bring in Morgan Schneiderlin, who formerly of Manchester United has played with us for the last 2 years, 3 years. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't really offer anything going forward. And so that kind of creates this imbalance in midfield where you have Gylfi Sigurdsson in front of him, who kind of struggles sometimes to get involved in games because he plays as more of a second striker and doesn't really drop back as much. And you have another midfield player who doesn't want to get the ball forward. So then what happens is we end up playing a lot of balls wide and looking to cross the ball in, and then we don't get players in the box. So the logic behind our attacking strategy has, I think, left a lot of fans a little baffled. But it goes back to just losing a player so instrumental in the midfield in Idrissa Gueye, and then losing his replacement to injury. And so we've kind of struggled with that depth.
Right. So I do want to bring up, I want to transition to the game this weekend and get us on our way. So the game again, folks, is at 7:30 Eastern, the 12:30 lunchtime kickoff for England time, and 4:30 a.m. on the West Coast. And that can be found live on NBCSN. So a few of the key injuries here again, like you said, Jean-Philippe is out for Everton. Theo Walcott is day-to-day with a concussion. Fabian Delp has a hamstring injury, and we are lucky we are missing your starting right back at Seamus Coleman. So for suspension, he is your starting right back, correct?
Yeah, he is.
Typically. And
yeah, he's been our mainstay at right back for like the last decade, and he's actually been pretty good for us this season. A lot of criticism came his way last season. There were some dips in form, but we did pick up in the summer Djibril Sidibe, who actually was in the France World Cup squad when they won. And we got him on loan from Monaco with an option to buy. So this will kind of, he played in one of our cup matches, but hasn't really seen much action in the Premier League. We're going to get our first glimpse of him at right back this Saturday. And I think fans are excited, but nervous to see how he performs.
Yeah, I'm glad I didn't have to pronounce that one and you did that one for me. We are in West Ham. We are without Lukas Fabianski again. He is going to be out till mid-January. So that's a big, big loss for us. Getting behind Roberto. I think he played solid last week against Palace. I think, well, one of them was a penalty and the other one I didn't really think was all too much of his fault. We're without Antonio still, Snodgrass, and Winston Reid is day-to-day, which the final three mentioned there really aren't going to affect our starting lineup. So can you give me a prediction and goal scorers for Everton?
Yeah, so, I mean, I can't predict a loss, obviously. I mean, times are tough right now for Evertonians, but this is a must-win game, and I think the squad is going to be coming back from the international break somewhat refreshed and ready to go. I think they know what's at stake. So I do think it's going to be a really exciting game and fun to watch. Fairly open because we tend to be pretty vulnerable on the counterattack. I'm going to go with a 2-1 win for Everton. I'm going to say that Richarlison and Moise Keane get on the score sheet.
Gets off the mark there for Moise Keane. I'm going to go 1-0 win for West Ham. We get back on winning ways. I think the goal comes from Sebastian Allaire on a scrappy corner. And I think we do a smash and grab. Everton dominates most of the game and we look a mess, but we somehow smash and grab 3 points out of that one. So I want to say thanks again to James from the American Toffee Podcast. Can you plug your podcast and anything else you want to say there for you guys?
Yeah, American Toffee Podcast. You can find us on pretty much any platform, Spotify. We're on YouTube. We're on Apple Podcasts, obviously. And then definitely give us a follow on Twitter. Even if you are a West Ham fan, we love to engage in debates with fans. The Twitter is at USA Toffee Pod. So give us a follow and
tweet us your score.
I don't have a personal Twitter.
Oh, okay. No worries. I mean, yeah. Did I say pod? I meant personal Twitter. No, yeah. No. Okay. No worries. I would recommend following them, guys. I actually follow them on my personal and on my, on our West Ham Way USA podcast, and they're a great follow. They, speak a lot of good stuff, and they do interact. They'll comment on West Ham info, and I'll comment on Everton stuff. So they're a great friend of the podcast and really appreciate them. So if you want to follow us, it is West Ham Way US Pod. If you want to follow me, I'm at Tony Clark Dupe on Twitter. We do have a Facebook. Just shoot us a message at West Ham Way USA. And then last but not least, go follow us on iTunes, SoundCloud, Spotify, your toaster, your TV, and give us a 5-star review and a rating. So thank you again, James. I appreciate it. And come on, you Irons. And I'm assuming you're going to say,
up the Toffees.
Up the Toffees. Come on, you Irons. Thanks again, man.